Story time with Dusty, okay? Now, my mother, I'm not going to release any names, used to be a ER nurse. So she saw some weird shit a lot of the time. I remember her telling me one story that a dude came in on her shift with an onion on his butt. Well, not in, on, but in his butt. And they had to remove it from said anal cavity. Okay? Then, a month later, she wasn't working, but she heard from her fellow nurses and doctors. Same dude came in with a bottle stuck inside of him. Okay? Listen, all right? No, don't do that, okay? Listen, I know some of you are into that freaky stuff, okay? Can we just stick to dicks and dildos in there, please? Like, I'm trying to save you guys, okay? From an awkward encounter at the doctor's office, okay? No. Only dicks and dildos. Fingers and thumbs, okay? Please. Please, people, I'm begging you. Or I will put you on blast if I find that out. If I find out that you went to the hospital to get a bottle or any other thing that is not a dildo, finger, dick, or thumb removed from your butthole, I'm going to make fun of you. Okay? Please, people. Please. Only dicks, dildos, thumbs, and fingers. Okay?
Welcome back to the Rainy Day Horror Show. I'm Big Daddy D, and you are listening to the number one podcast on the internet. And on today's beautiful Serial Killer Sunday episode, we are going to be talking about one of the most notorious serial killers from Oklahoma. Now, this story dates all the way back to the early 1900s. So, like with usual stories that date this far back, there are going to be some gaps, going to be some little loopholes, okay? But we did our best to try and cover every aspect of this serial killer. The serial killer in question for today's episode is William King Hale. And he was part of one of the, well, there's a little bit of conspiracy behind this guy, because some people think that he started and it was only him that partook in one of the biggest mass murders in Oklahoma. But other people think that there was, you know, a few other people that were involved. So, I'm gonna let you guys decide that at the end of this episode. But without further ado, I'm going to introduce your host for this evening's show, Dusty McBalls, aka the Certified Cougar Hunter, and your host with the most. Now sit back, relax, and listen to this beautiful little episode.
thank you, Big D, for that beautiful little intro. And yes, like he said in the intro, we are taking a trip to Oklahoma to learn about William King Hale, also known as the King of the Osage Hills. I hope I said that right. Sorry to my Oklahoma viewers if I fucking butchered that. But, yeah, I hope you guys are having a good weekend. God, it is, so, it's like 75 degrees here right now, okay? Which is nice. It's warm out. No more cold for the rest of the fucking year, okay? But holy shit, is my room hot, okay? And I think it's because, like, so when the sun rises and sets, it's literally in front of my window basically the entire time, so I get all those fucking sun rays just hitting the window, and my room is so fucking warm right now, it is not even funny. Drink break. If you're wondering what I'm drinking, it is Coke. Coca-Cola, not the drug, you psychos. I'm not drinking Coke. What am I, a lunatic? Pfft, no. Not all the time, at least. But, yeah, it's going to be a good episode. The rundown for this episode is going to be a little bit more confusing than usual, so I'm going to kind of backtrack a little bit here and tell you how we're going to do it. Well, I don't really have to backtrack, but whatever. I'm going to start off with the Osage murders and, like, what they were and basically everything surrounding them. And then I'm going to introduce our serial killer of the day for this episode, and then I'm going to go through his background, and then I'm going to jump into his conviction and stuff like that. So when I introduce him, I'm going to be basically kind of reiterating some things from what happened in the beginning of the episode, specifically during the Osage murders. So just want to point that out and let you guys know that there is going to be some reiteration within this episode. So, without further ado, we are going to just jump right into this episode. Get those Crocs on. Get something to drink. Get something to eat, okay? We're going on an adventure. It's going to be a fun one. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be long. So, let's do this. Now, the Osage Native American murders began in the early 1920s. And the reason it started was because they were earning $30 million due to their oil-rich land in Oklahoma. Now, although that they have been, like, they were driven out from their original territory in Kansas, like most Native American tribes in U.S. history, they found themselves in a very unique and powerful, aneurysm alert, powerful position due to the oil deposits that were on their newly owned land. David Gran, who is an author of Killers of the Flower Moon, detailed in his book that the tribe had purchased a stretch of craggy, barren land in northeast Oklahoma in the 1870s after they were driven out of their, you know, territory in Kansas by white settlers. Now, most, if you look at U.S. history, most of the time, the reason that these white settlers were driving out these Native American tribes was because on the land that these, on the territory that these tribes occupied, there were a lot of minerals, like gold, silver, stuff like that, and that's why they were driving them out. Now, with the Osage tribe, it was different. It played out way more to their benefit compared to the other tribes that have, you know, had these minerals, have had these, you know, luxuries on their land. Because before the Osage tribe moved here, they suspected that there could potentially be oil underneath them. And when they kind of had this idea, they made sure that they protected themselves and their land so they wouldn't get pushed out again. And they established an act with the U.S. government called the Osage Allotment Act of 1906. And this made sure that they had rights to own any subsurface minerals found within their territory. And with the discovery of the oil, the Osage Native Americans became wildly wealthy very quick. And each Osage member who owned a specific plot of land in their territory soon received a headright to the profits, which means it's a hereditary... These profits, these headrights were hereditary, and that meant that it would be passed on to the landowner's legal heir. I don't know. Okay. Gran would, in an interview with NPR, explain you could not sell or buy a headright. It was collectively controlled by the Osage, and each one had a headright or a share. And what that meant is they would receive a check for any royalties or any leases that derived from the oil money. And the American public, when all of this started to come out, became very, very fascinated by the Osage. And this is going to be kind of racist. Well, not kind of, but is a little bit racist. Not even a little bit. Is a lot of bit racist. They would start labeling the Osage tribe in, like, the media with, like, the newspapers and stuff like that, red millionaires. And it would just get worse from there. Like, they came out with a... Even though they had all the money... Well, not all of the money, but a lot of the money in Oklahoma, it did not erase any racist stereotypes at all, okay? One newspaper would even come out and say that... Well, not come out and say, but would come out and put a title in the newspaper that... Oh, this is bad. That Lament. I don't know this word. Lo, the poor Indian might appropriately be revised to ho the rich redskin. Holy fuck. Where is today's censorship when it comes to shit like this? Like, they should have today's censorship like back then. Like, holy fucking Christ. That's bad, right? That is bad. Like, I thought today, you know, like, today's still kind of racist, but, like, holy fucking shit. At least you can't just, like, randomly post racist shit or you get booted off everything, right? At least there's that. But, like, if we had today's censorship back in, like, the 1800s, 1900s, holy fucking Christ, people would be getting just fucking canceled for everything. That's insane. That's insane. I think, like, hey, go back into a time machine, all right? Just fucking censor everything that's, like, racist like that, because holy fucking shit. Or maybe they need, like, you know, a teaching class. Maybe that's what it is. Holy shit. That is so, so bad. But even though that they were getting all this money and everything was, you know, going great for them, minus the racisms, they couldn't use their money as freely as they wanted, okay? At the time, Congress insisted that every tribal member should be appointed a white guardian to manage his or her assets and supervise how they spent their oil wealth. One Osage World War I veteran angrily remarked, "I fought in France for this country, and yet I'm not even allowed to sign my own checks." And despite this oil and this wealth flowing from beneath the Osage tribal members' feet, the 2,000 tribal members were capable and they did live in like these grand houses. These beautiful, magnificent houses that were just being propped up on their lands. And in a funny turn of events, as a kind of like a fuck you to the white people at the time, they ended up, most of them had white servants. But because of all of this money, all of this oil, and these white servants, it put a huge, a massive fucking target on their back. Now, starting in May, when this shit, this killing of the Osage members kicked off, started in May of 1921, when Osage tribal members were being killed at an alarming rate. Just that month and that month alone, Osage tribal members Anna Brown and Charles Whitehorn were shot to death just weeks apart. Then a couple months later, Anna's mother, Lizzie Q. Kyle, also died, and it was later revealed that she was likely poisoned. History reports that over 24 tribal members were shot, stabbed, beaten, and bombed in the early 1920s. Sorry, I just burped. Prompting the tribe to send Barney McBride, one of the rare white oilmen willing to help the Osage, to go to Washington, D.C. to seek assistance from federal authorities. But less than a day after he had arrived in Washington, D.C., McBride was stabbed at least 20 times. And this murder was described by the newspapers as the most brutal in crime annals in the district. Annals. Funny. No. Okay, we are not putting things there. You fucking freaks. No. Okay? I mean, I guess if you do it on a regular basis, I guess it's okay. But, like, listen, okay? What I'm trying to say is, some things are just not meant to go in your butt, okay? Story time with Dusty, okay? Now, my mother, I'm not going to release any names, used to be a ER nurse. So, she saw some weird shit a lot of the time. I remember her telling me one story that a dude came in on her shift with an onion on his butt. Well, not in, on, but in his butt. And they had to remove it from said anal cavity. Okay? Then, a month later, she wasn't working, but she heard from her fellow nurses and doctors. Same dude came in with a bottle stuck inside of him. Okay, listen, all right? No, don't do that, okay? Listen, I know some of you are into that freaky stuff, okay? Can we just stick to dicks and dildos in there, please? Like, I'm trying to save you guys, okay? From an awkward encounter at the doctor's office, okay? No. Only dicks and dildos. Fingers and thumbs, okay? Please. Please, people, I'm begging you. Or I will put you on blast if I find that out. If I find out that you went to the hospital to get a bottle or any other thing that is not a dildo, finger, dick, or thumb removed from your butthole, I'm going to make fun of you. Okay? Please, people. Please. Only dicks, dildos, thumbs, and fingers. Okay? Well, I guess the thumb is a finger, but you get what I mean. You get what I mean. All right. Back to the story. Now, McBride's killing was obviously to get a message across that people, white people that were, you know, well inclined and were really good friends with the Osage tribe weren't fucking safe, okay? They weren't. And this point was further proven when a white attorney with a lead on the case of like the Osage murders was flung from a moving train. Now, meanwhile, they sent McBride and this attorney to Washington, D.C. The killings of the Osage tribal members continued, and an Oklahoma History reported that Henry Rowan, Lizzie Q. Kyle's nephew, was murdered in January of 1923. And a couple months later in March, Lizzie's daughter, Rita Smith, her husband, William B. Smith, or William E. Bill Smith, and their servant were all killed when their home was bombed. Now, when Rita's husband was being pulled from the rubble of this explosion, he told the authorities, as he was being pulled out, that they got Rita, and now it looks like they've got me. And after he said that, he died due to his injuries. Now, the Osage Reign of Terror just completely scared their community. And to combat this, like, killer that is on the loose, they would basically keep their lights on in their house and outside of their house. They would keep them on all night to hopefully increase security. That was their plan, to increase security. And they also prohibited children from going anywhere by themselves. Some families even started their own private investigations in an attempt to find out who was behind the killings. But as the killings progressed and more Osage members were getting, you know, killed, oft put 6 feet deep, federal authorities couldn't ignore and turn a blind eye to the murders. And this eventually turned into them sending in some federal agents, they sent agents from the Bureau of Investigation, which is formally known, well, not formally, which is the name before the FBI, okay? And they wanted these agents to dig into this span of murders. Now, J. Edgar Hoover, the director of the Bureau of Investigation, which is going to be in the future, the FBI, eventually sent a former Texas Ranger named Tom White to investigate the killings. Gran, eventually, when he was being interviewed in 2018 with NPR, he told them that White compiled a team of frontier lawmen to go undercover with him, including a Native American man named John Wren, who happens to be one of the first Native Americans or indigenous federal agents. White soon proved to be more than, you know, capable with this task because he had years of experience from being a lawman in Texas. So He was sent up there because of his credentials to figure out what was going on. And when him and his agents arrived in Oklahoma, they uncovered something quite terrifying. Him and his team soon discovered that an Osage woman named Molly Burkhart, who happened to be the daughter of the murdered Lizzie Q. Kyle and the sister of the murdered Anna Brown and Rita Smith, was married to a white man named Ernest Buckhart. And Buckhart was the nephew of our serial killer of the day, William K. Hale, the so-called, the AKA, the also known as King of the Osage Hills. Which brings us to me now describing who the fuck this man is. Okay? Where'd he come from? Who is he? And what did he do? So, William King Hale was born near Greenville, Texas on Christmas Eve in 1874. To a very large and respectable, wealthy family. His father was a farmer and rancher, and his mom just was a stay-at-home mom, okay? Now, this, since these happened so long ago, some of the records are a little bit destroyed, and there's some loopholes, so I'm going to try and fix them. Well, I tried to fix them as best as I could, but there are going to be some names missing, some certain things not here, and I would assume that's just because records do get destroyed and things just, you know, happen to go missing because this was over 100 fucking years ago. So I don't expect them to be holding on to this forever. Now, when, from what I could find, he pretty much lived a normal wealthy childhood, you know, just did rich kid shit. And when he was 16, he decided to leave. William decided to leave Texas and wanted to become a cowboy, so he moved to Oklahoma. And for the next few years, he would just bounce back and forth between Texas and Oklahoma, basically buying and selling cattle, and some of which he was accused of just outright stealing. And one of his closest acquaintances, whose name I could not find, basically said that he is the most energetic man that I ever knew. He never loitered, and even when he crossed the street, he acted as if he were going after something big. Around 1902, he did eventually get married to a young school teacher and settled in the Osage Hills in northeast Oklahoma, where he and his wife spent their first, living spree, I guess. Spree's not the right word, but when they first started living in Oklahoma, they were living in tents. They were really, really broke. And the reason that they became so broke was because they had some severe financial issues and was in debt. He was roughly $10,000 in debt, which is about $350,000 in 2023. Now, after working for other ranchers for several years, he formed a partnership with two local bankers and began leasing grazing land from the Osage. Eventually, he ended up holding the lease on like roughly 45,000 acres and owned 5,000 acres that was specifically his. His other holdings would grow to include financial interests in a bank, a general store, and perhaps the most effective one for him was a funeral home. But for the young and ambitious Hale, that was clearly not enough. All the money that he had was just clearly, you know, he needed more. He became money hungry. And he knew that the real wealth wasn't on the Osage grazing lands, but it's what laid underneath them in the oil deposits. Now, I'm going to start backtracking a little bit, double covering some things, just so you know it lines up with everything. Now, the oil had been discovered in the Osage land in the as early as 1890, but it wasn't until 1907 or so that business began to take off. Members of the Osage Nation owned all the oil rights collectively, and they divided the proceeds equally among themselves through what was known as head rights. Already kind of went over that. And by 1926, according to the Oklahoma Historical Society, the Osage average family, which would just be like a husband, wife, and like three children, were receiving more than $65,000 a year, which is more than $1.1 million in today's time. And among those that were benefiting heavily from the oil was Molly Buckhart, who was a tribal member to the Osage territory and was the wife of Hale's nephew, Ernest Buckhart. And there are some accounts that when Ernest met Molly, Hale kind of forced Ernest to try and marry her, okay? And that's what kind of happened. Now, when some of these murders did kick off a little bit in 1918, but they really didn't start until the early 1920s. Now, the first tragedy that happened within Molly's family was when her younger sister Minnie, who was 27 at the age of, or not the age, at the time of her death, was basically, it was kind of like just a very sudden thing. And it caught, like, she shouldn't have died. She was very, very healthy. And she basically succumbed to a mysterious, quote unquote, wasting disease. And that was the first murder within this family. Then in May of 1921, her sister Anna Brown was shot to death. Their mother, Lizzie Kyle, died in July due to the poisoning. Henry Rowan, a cousin, died in another shooting in January of 1923. And then 2 months later, Lizzie's other daughter, Rita Smith, was killed along with her husband and their housekeeper when an explosion tore through their home. And all of their wealth and oil rights transferred to Molly and Ernest. And when she noticed that all of her family members were getting picked off one by one, she got scared, okay? She was terrified that she might be next. And realistically, she should be, because I would be fucking terrified too. And if she died, that would mean that Ernest would get everything, putting it basically well within reach of his uncle, William King Hale. And he had a very, very good cover within this community. He was a very prominent member and had constructed a very benevolent facade as a generous friend to the Osage tribal members. But his facade that he was upholding amongst the people didn't really trick the four FBI agents that were investigating this whole situation with the Osage tribe members. Now, it took the fucking FBI agents 3 years to do something about this. And the reason it took them so long was because everyone was either suspicious of outsiders or bribed into keeping their mouth shut. So it took these four federal agents 3 years to build the case against William Hale. And they had to slowly do this. They couldn't just go in right away and, you know, attack everybody and try to figure it out. Because, like I said a little bit ago, everybody was either bribed or was scared to speak out. And they knew that if they were possibly going to be talking to these white people, these, well, three white people and this other Native American FBI agent, they were afraid that they might be next and they might get killed. So these guys had to slowly do their thing. And one kind of, well, let me backtrack. One went undercover. There we go. Undercover as a local population, posed as a doctor. Another went as a oil prospector. Another went as an insurance salesman. And the final one went as a cattle industry buyer. And these agents lived amongst the people, lived within the community, and slowly built their case against William Hale, waiting for him to slip up. Now, the reason he basically struck their radar and popped up real quick was because all they did was just follow the money. And they realized that all of these people within this one specific family were dying just randomly, either shot or being poisoned, right? So they were waiting for someone to, with whether it was Buckhart or whether it was Hale, and they were just waiting and waiting and waiting and then waiting some more. And then finally, old William Hale fucking slipped, and he happened to have taken out a life insurance policy on his nephew's cousin-in-law with one of the agents posed as an insurance salesman just before he was discovered. And this person was Rowan, the dude that was shot, the cousin to Molly that was shot in broad daylight. And this is what happened. After he went to the life insurance policy person, agent, he took out a $25,000 life insurance policy just a few days after the murder. And this was just like, whoa, hold on here a second. We finally got him, okay? Next person is going to be Molly. She is the lone one within this family. And that's what they did. They followed the money and it led them straight to their killer. And when it led them to Hale, after he withdrew that money, the $25,000 life insurance policy, they also started to look at Ernest. And they believed that Ernest, well, the FBI agents believed that Ernest had an extremely weak will and was under the control of his uncle. And as the FBI explains to, well, as the FBI agents explained to the reporters after this all took down, they were able to pressure Ernest into talking. And he finally broke and started to willingly talk to these FBI agents and told them what was going down. And once they were told, on January in 1926, they eventually arrested Hale, and he was indicted by a grand jury for the murder of Henry Rowan. Henry had been killed on federal land rather than tribal land, which gave the government jurisdiction in his case. Now, Hale's motives that prosecutors said or maintained was a $25,000 life insurance policy that he had taken out on his life. And the alleged triggerman that actually killed Henry was John Ramsey, who was identified in the newspaper as a cowboy farmer, and he was also indicted on the same charge. And when they went to trial, it wasn't a short, you know, over and done thing. It took them forever. Now, the first attempt at a trial was derailed due to a legal technicality. So then they went to a second trial, which began in July, which ended in a hung jury. And the men were then retired in I'm dyslexic today and I can't read. The men were then retried in October, and before the month was over, both men were convicted of first-degree murders, which prompted Hale's attorneys, after he was convicted, to appeal the conviction, and that led to a fourth trial in January of 1929. This time, Hale was convicted once and for all and was sentenced to life in prison. Now, through Hale's multiple trials, courtroom observers would always say that he was really, really calm, didn't even look anxious, nothing like that, and that he should have also been given the death penalty. Now, after he was convicted, he was then sentenced to Leavenworth, Kansas, and he stayed there for nearly 2 decades. And while he was there, he just basically did his time and worked on the nearby prison farm. And according to the correctional officers, there we go, he was just a model prisoner. He did his time, he did great, he didn't have any issues, and just fucking did it, right? And unfortunately, though, he was eventually paroled in July of 1947, which surprised a lot of the Osage tribal members because they still believed that he should be put away for good. And once he was paroled, he then moved to Montana, was basically just a cowboy out there, and according to the FBI, he also worked at a motor restaurant drive-in combination where he would eventually retire from there. Then once he retired from there, he moved all the way down to Arizona where he would eventually die in a Phoenix nursing home in August of 1962 at the age of 87. And that is the story of the King of the Osage Hills, or William King Hale. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. To be honest, I thought it was okay. It was kind of difficult to research this one just because it was so fucking far back. And yeah, kind of annoying, but I wanted to switch it up, and I thought this would be a great way to switch things up because it was a terrible time in Oklahoma history. So, what do we got going on this week? I don't know what we're going to do for tomorrow's horror movie breakdown. No idea yet. I'll figure something out. Probably watch something tonight. Friday, I don't really know what we're going to do yet. I'm trying to think of something. Something good. Something real good. Maybe a disappearance on a Walt Disney cruise. Saw that one. Well, okay, I should say I saw a story on it and it looked interesting, so I'm gonna fucking read up on it and see if it's good enough. Should be. Cause fuck Disney. Hate you guys. Fucking weirdos. I don't know what you got going on over there. But something about you is just shady. I don't know your whole history other than Walt Disney was racist and a piece of shit. But I feel like something else is going on fishy over there. Why did a person disappear on one of your cruises, Disney? Take them to the back rooms? Is that what happened? I don't know. Maybe do that one, but we'll figure it out. And then I believe next Sunday, I have to look it up. I think we're going somewhere pretty cool. I do think we're going somewhere pretty cool. Holy fuck, I gotta figure this out. Sorry, I'm like trying to talk and figure out what I'm doing for next weekend, and it's slowing me down. My ADHD is so fucking bad today. It really is. It's awful. It's really fucking bad. But okay, here we go. Where are you? Utah. Oh, Utah. The Mormons. Oh, the Mormons. Christians, are you surprised I didn't go after you this episode? I bet you are. But the Mormons. Oh. Yay, Mormons. Maybe we'll find a serial... Maybe they have a serial killer that only killed Mormons? It's like a fuck you to Mormonism? I don't know. We'll figure it out. So, I'm gonna leave you guys here for the rest of the day. Go enjoy the rest of your Sunday. It's warm out. I'm fucking so hot right now. It's not even funny. I'm so fucking toasty. But, yeah. Remember, stay frosty. Stay foxy. Most importantly, the most important thing on this planet. Stay safe, you beautiful peacocks. I love you, Oklahoma. Deuces.